Well, hello, folks. You know you're in for a treat when you hear that tune, because it's time for another week of the Rec Poker Podcast. I'm so excited to be here on Monday night at 7:30 Eastern, free and live on YouTube, because I've got the best freaking job in the world. My name's Jim Reed. I'm Bluffsterini in the home game and at Rec Poker Jim on Twitter and Threads. And I'm here because I get to host the Rec Poker Podcast. I'm chatting with my poker friends about all the things that are going on in the poker world. Rec Poker is a largely volunteer-based organization. Most of what we do here is free. So I have to thank our sponsors, the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino. And I have to thank our premium members, because we couldn't do what we do without them. We've got a new premium member this month, James Ramberg. Can't wait to meet another James and see what got him interested in coming up to join Rec Poker. So like all premium members, he'll be getting an email from me with an invitation for a one-on-one chat to sort of get into what he loves about poker and how he can get the most out of his membership. But I am just one of the folks around here that make all the magic happen. It takes a crew to work all the things that we do here at Rec Poker. We call ourselves the Wrecking Crew. And if you want to find out more about me and the other members of the Wrecking Crew, you can go to rec.poker/crew. But without me screwing up the order this week, you can also just tune in right now, because you're going to meet a few of them right here on the show.
I'm Ben Enslow. I'm BJamin96 on Twitch. I got all my socials over there. You can check me out there. And I'm East Coast Bitter in the home game.
And I'm Chris Jones, and I'm shocked Jim didn't mess up the order here. You can find me 5b5 on Threads and sporadically on Twitter.
And I am John Somsky, also known as Poker Geek MN, everywhere.
I'm Rob Washam, and you can find me as Rabman50 just about everywhere.
Well, I am so happy to be here with these fine gentlemen, like I am each and every week. And we've got a couple fun things to talk about tonight. First of all, just at the top of the show, I want to remind people this Saturday, September 16th at 2 o'clock Eastern in the afternoon, or 1 o'clock Central, as John likes to say, the only time zone that matters, is our Heads Up tournament. We run one of these every quarter. It's on the third Saturday of June, September, and December. And this is your chance to win your way in to Marek Madness coming around in March. So you need to be there on time. There is no late registration. This is a ladder bracket tournament. But if you are around on Saturday afternoon, try your hand and join the fun here in the Rec Poker Heads Up Challenge on the 16th. So hope folks can make that. Speaking of challenges, before we get into the meat of the show, I see that my own friend Jim Gibber, Jim Gibson, we call him Gibber. We call him the real Jim. He has been a fixture around here for a long time. Jim got some interesting news recently. Chris Jones, why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on there and how we should be celebrating our friend?
Well, I mean, you're just going to cue this thing up. I think there's some really wonderful audio. So our own Jim Gibson was competing in the GG satellite to get himself into the main event, the WSOP Bahamas. I think they're calling it WSOP in Paradise, I think is the official title of this. So we have a little bit of a clip. Jim, you're not sharing your screen yet. Yeah, we have a little bit of a clip from this, and we're just going to watch it and see how this all played out.
Yeah, let's see how we did.
Awful. Yes. Yes. Get him. Come on, baby. Oh, shit. Jack or 10. Yes!
Yes!
Yes! Yes! Oh. Look at it! Look at it! Woo! Going to the Bahamas! Yes! Hot damn! There it is, baby.
I almost blasted off in chat, but...
Wow!
Give away the surprise.
Yeah, you gotta wait.
Well, oh, just so good.
Sounds like he had some luck there. Are some congratulate... Uh-oh. Hold on. We got multiple
things
up in here. Hold on.
I was watching it live last night when it happened.
Yep.
And yeah, he was freaking out of his mind. He just went nuts. And so I guess so did everybody that was watching him live went nuts.
So congratulations, Jim. I guess you've got some plans. Is it this? It's December, right? This is the one that's coming up just before the holidays. So congratulations to the real Jim. Jim Gibson. I mean,
and he wins an opportunity to play in a really great main event. I think it's got a great structure, go to a paradise place. And he has the privilege of buying $40 bottles of water. So it's a win-win-win everywhere, all around.
That is so sweet. What a lucky guy.
Yeah.
And Jim, if we don't hook up between now and then at a Rec Poker road trip, let me make sure I mail you out just a ton of patches, buddy. I want to see Rec Poker all over that final table when you crush the field onto your eventual fantastic victory. So congratulations to Jim. Great opportunity to head down there. And thanks for all your support, Jim, over the years. It's great to see all that Rec Poker study and practice paying off in a big way. So congratulations again, buddy. So that's just part of what's been going on. I mean, that's pretty damn exciting. But we had the Run Good road trip down to Baltimore. I got to go down there, did some carpooling with Kim Kilroy and Stu Carriage, which was fantastic. I had my audition for the Poker Friends Forever group. I think it went pretty well. We're going to hear back. Got to wait and hear back from the powers that be. But I thought we had a pretty good run. And got to meet up with some new premium member down there, Jennifer Galloway, which was great. And got to connect with Denise Allen, who's been a member here for a long time and lives in the region. So that was super fun. What a great event. Those Run Good folks, they know how to have a good time. And I want to just remind folks, coming up November 14th through 19th in Council Bluffs, Iowa, we are going to blow the doors off that Run Good event. If you are listening to this, write it down, folks. Head over to rec.poker/roadtrips and you can see some details about some upcoming road trips events. We're going to be in Cleveland. We're going to be in Montreal. We're going to be in Council Bluffs, Iowa. We're going to be back in Las Vegas, December. I think we're going to be back in Minnesota in the new year, but nothing's confirmed yet. But there's a lot of exciting stuff happening over there as well. But the one I'm really looking forward to right now is Council Bluffs, Iowa with the Run Good poker series, November 14th to 19th. We're going to be giving away a bunch of free prizes. There's going to be a bunch of Rec Poker Wrecking Crew members down there. There's going to be promotional stuff from Run Good. There's going to be training opportunities. There's going to be free stuff. There's going to be fun stuff. Please do circle that. I want to blow the doors off that trip. I want to have a whole bunch of fun down there, meet a bunch of members, give a bunch of stuff away. It's going to be so much fun. And as you know, we're all about the fun here at Rec Poker. So speaking of fun, Chris Jones, you were playing in a friendly home game last week, and it kind of got this conversation started offline about all the wacky games that get played at home games around the country. You kind of mentioned this could be an interesting subject for the podcast tonight. Tell us a little bit about your experience.
Yeah, I got invited to a game I'd never played in. It's a game that's been kind of in existence for about 20 or more years. And just somebody in my neighborhood said, "Hey, you play poker. I thought you have a podcast, right? Come check this out." So anyway, I got invited to this game, but I had no idea what I was getting myself into. I just had no idea. I was like, I mean, is it good? Is it what kind of game we're playing in? And so, he said, you know, we play a mix of games. You'll see. And I was like, okay. So I show up, and I tell you, I mean, I had forgotten, like, there is this sort of like, you know, most of the kind of even, you know, home games I've played in are pretty much, we play the standard games, the games you find at the WSOP. And this was not like that at all. It was just like crazy, crazy games. And one of the things I thought would be interesting to talk about is, and we can talk about what the crazy games are, but also like how you adjust on the fly to, you know, you understand poker strategy, but like what does it do when you're trying to figure out, okay, well, this game, you have all this stuff going on, and we'll talk about some of the variations I played a little later, but like how do you even make some adjustments and play them properly as you're just kind of even learning the rules?
Yeah, and I think we're all very familiar with No Limit Hold'em. Most of the listeners are. And some of us have kind of dipped a toe into Omaha. But I wanted to invite John Somsky to share the mic here a little bit, because John's our resident mixed game expert slash enthusiast. And we've been trying to make mixed games kind of more of a presence here at Rec Poker and in the poker world over the last couple of years. John, if you were playing at a home game, what are some of the mixed games that you feel like would be a good addition, that they're not so complicated or crazy that people are going to have trouble picking them up, but that, you know, are interesting and fun and you enjoy playing?
I find when playing in home games, I think lowball games are a good thing to add if you're not used to doing it, for a couple of reasons. There are people who claim they never get a good hand, therefore they should be instant winners at lowball games. And there's lots of different varieties of them. Raz is one of the most common people will be familiar with. That's in a seven card stud format, where the best possible hand is ace through five. So you have no pairs and ace is counting low, and straights and flushes do not count in Raz. There's also Omaha high-low. If you're playing Omaha already, add a little high-low in there. I think that's always a fun way to expand things that isn't mind-blowing. I mean, figuring out what a low hand is arguably easier than figuring out what the high hands are. So I think that's a great place to start.
And I'll open it up to the panel or anyone watching in the YouTube chat. If you've got any experiences with wacky games being played at your home games, feel free to type them in. And I'll also remind, if you're in the YouTube chat, we're going to be doing our raffle at the end of the show for a prize. People will be able to type in the words food bank and win a prize for free, a real prize, real money prize, but for free, just for showing up here on Monday night at 7:30 in the YouTube chat. Rob, you unmuted there. You have a little experience with some wacky home games?
Yes, I actually do. Long before I even knew Hold'em existed as a game, this was probably 35, 40 years ago. I was in my probably late 20s, early 30s. And we used to play around the kitchen table with my in-laws and my wife and her brothers and sisters and whatnot. And it would be, these games were like, I don't know where they came from. Spit in the Ocean was one. And now I can't even remember the rules for Spit in the Ocean, but it was Spit in the Ocean. And there was one called Chicago, and I think Chris mentioned that on Discord. And then we'd play Blind Baseball. And
Blind Baseball. I've heard of baseball, but
that came
up. Baseball?
That game, we played that game. I was like, what is even going on right now? I had no idea how to approach that game.
So for normal baseball, threes and nines are wild. And if you get a four dealt up, you can buy another card from the dealer, is my understanding. It's a seven card stud game, right?
Basically right. The same. Except what happens is everybody gets dealt seven cards and they're down.
And you can't look at them.
So you can't look at them. And then the first person to play puts up a card.
Okay.
Now that's the card that the next person has to beat. Okay. So then if the next person will pull up cards until they beat that card. So if the first person pulls up an ace, obviously you have to come up with a pair or whatever. And then, like you say, threes and nines are wild and four gets you an extra card.
Yeah. I've heard.
And so there's absolutely no strategy at all.
Yeah, that's like a lot of just hoping and praying when you flip your card and like squeezing the card and like, oh, okay.
And there's a round of betting every time somebody beats whatever the previous
Correct.
Thing was. So you're sitting there having you have a full undisclosed
yes.
stack of cards. And you have to make this like, well, is this worth staying in? How many wilds have been exposed? It's like a really weird calculation that you have to make.
So the first peel would be more of like just the luck of the draw. But then after that, you could use whatever cards. You could kind of discount some cards after, once you start drawing more and more bets go in and stuff like right. that, basically.
Well, the thing is if you're playing at a full table. So you can also play this game without any wilds or anything like that. And that's called seven card no peek. Seven cards, everyone's dealt with them face down, and then you turn them over one at a time. But then the you don't know if you want to be early or late in the thing, because you might get around. If you're the first one to draw, you get to turn one card over, and that's it. And you don't get to see any of your other cards until it's gone all the way around the table, and there's been a betting round between each and every single bet. So that makes it a little bit difficult.
So some of these are the games that I learned to play growing up as a kid with my family, because we didn't play No Limit Hold'em. We played five card draw and seven card stud, and maybe some five card stud. And so just as a real refresher for folks, like five card draw is the game that you see in all the old cowboy movies when you've got five cards that only you can see. They're all up cards, and you can choose to discard one to three of them and then draw one to three new cards. And that's how you make your hand. So it's entirely a private information game. There are no community cards. There's no up cards. And so putting players on hands is real tricky, because you really only have to go on the cards that you have seen and the number of cards that they've chosen to draw. So that's a very interesting strategic game. Whereas seven card stud, everyone gets dealt two down cards and one up card. And then there's a round of betting. You end up getting another round of betting every time a new card is introduced. And then you end up with two down cards, four up cards, and then one down card again each. So you can see four cards out of everybody else's hand, and you just don't know what their three up cards are. So that's a much more public information game. And you can make a lot more educated guesses about the kind of strength of the hand that your opponent might have. And then five card studs, basically the same, just two cards down, two cards up, and then, or is it, I've seen a few different varieties of that actually, but, I feel pretty comfortable with those games just because they're like my childhood games, but, there are some interesting variations that you can put into here. So Rob, you already talked about, blind baseball or no peek'em or whatever John called that one, where the cards are all down. Baseball, the game I'm familiar with, is just seven card stud, but threes and nines are wild, and you can buy a new card if you get a four for the price of one bet. So that one's a little out there. Chris, you mentioned is it Kings and Little Ones? That was one that I remember.
Kings and Little Things was the game that they played, and this is where kings are wild. So, and this is one where, like, oh, so kings are wild, and everyone's lowest card, down card, is wild.
So is this a stud game as well?
It's a seven card stud format, but it basically means like everyone has a wild down for sure,
at least.
And then, you know, if they have, like, you know, if they've got a two down and a two up, that's also, you know, both of those are wild, but nobody else's are wild. So that game, I mean, that game was never, there was never the winning hand didn't have five of a kind, basically. It was just like, so if you didn't have five of a kind, you were just like out or whatever.
Have a king, because there's four kings out there. If you have a king, you're almost certain to have at least twice as many wild cards as everybody else there, which is a big advantage.
Right. But I mean that, and then there was also one we played called this one was I thought maybe the most interesting, because I'm not a big fan of wild cards, and I just I don't even know how to approach a game when you have all these wild cards. But the maybe the wild card version that I actually enjoyed was a seven card stud game called Follow the Queen.
Yeah.
Which was, anytime a queen was exposed on one of the stud hands, the next card that followed it was a wild. And they had an interesting rule that if the last card exposed was a queen, then the next player who was, on sixth street, if it was a queen, the last card was a queen, the player in worst position, typically, you know, in a terrible spot, could match half the pot and have their fifth card be up. So it was like an automatic wild card.
Mm-hmm.
And that, mm-hmm. I thought, you know, that's kind of an interesting sort of twist to that game. But it's interesting because now you can build a whole hand based on the fact that I've got, you know, let's say a four is turned as a wild, right?
Like in the first round.
First
like
hand. I've got a four down and a four showing. And now I know I've got trips or better as the hand progresses. But those fours can just become a pair of fours if another queen shows up.
Right. And whenever a queen shows up, the previous wild cards are negated, correct?
Exactly. And so that's sort of interesting. Like how much I had one of these hands where I had a four. It was a queen, and then my four was shown. So, and I had a four down. So I had two wild cards. You know, this is an amazingly strong hand at this point. But like, how much do I keep, you know, betting at this, you know, until knowing that this can all just fall apart and go to ashes?
And when you're playing seven card stud, you know, that you're going to expose a lot of the cards in the deck because you're, you know, if you're playing with six players or seven players, if you're playing with seven players, that's 49 cards. Yeah. That's the bulk of the deck.
We had seven playing. So yeah, it was a lot of players.
And nobody's folding those games.
No.
It's not like your typical stud game where, you know, it's very easy to fold after three cards, you just fold because you have nothing. But in this game, everybody stays because you never know what's going
to
happen.
Right. And you're likely to see, you know, two or even three queens come up over the course of the game, changing what the wild card is each time. So that one's a really fun one as well. I think someone also mentioned Chicago. When I was growing up, we played Chicago where it was a split pot game where half the pot went to whoever had the best hand. And half the pot went to whoever had the highest buried spade. So whichever of everyone's down cards, the highest spade among the down cards would get half the pot.
So they played they played it with the low spade in this.
Yeah,
in
there's this high Chicago and low Chicago. And I think low Chicago is a little bit better of a game because that means whoever's going for the low half of the pot has a crappy card.
Right.
Right. So it's less likely to play with the other half of the
right,
pot.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that was interesting. I think the most interesting strategy as I was thinking about that is when you've got a high hand that's really strong, but not the nuts, like, or not the potential nuts at least, like, how aggressive do you get in that game when you don't have a spade? And then equally, when you have like the three of spades or something, like, can you go bananas with the three of spades? I don't really know.
Well, if you see the two of spades up, then you
can. Yeah.
But yeah, that's another one of those where as the deck gets dealt out, you might see those higher or lower spades get shown. Or depending on who you're playing against, you might just see it like reflected in their eyeballs getting big and excited as they look at that last down card that comes. Please.
And that's a good example of a game. While there is luck involved and it's not there is definitely a strategy to it. If you have half the pot locked up, like any split pot game, and you're still drawing live for the other half, and because in this you're not going to split, there's no, you're not going to get quartered or anything like that. You can drive the action and try to get just as much money as possible in there.
Yep.
Yeah, I like that. And so those are a lot of like, so those are a lot of like the wild card games kind of thing. The only other wild card variant that jumped out to me from my own childhood was just with any of these games. You can just like pick a wild card, like twos are wild or sevens are wild or something like that. The one that my dad always liked was One-Eyed Jacks and the Man with the Axe. It was just like it's still just three cards. It's the two One-Eyed Jacks, and I think it's the King of Diamonds that's holding the axe in one hand. But I always thought that was just like a cool way of saying it. And then so what other, here, let's, well, any other kind of varieties like that? I mean, I actually enjoy these stud games and draw games as a novelty, because they're very different strategically than we get into with Hold'em. And I think it's fun to kind of work your brain in a different way. John, you were going to say something there.
Yeah. Well, when I was young, we had a whole different class of games as well, and they aren't officially poker, but they usually were played at poker nights. And in these games, there were, you typically start off with an ante, and then you would be betting against the pot to try to take some money in or out of the pot. And there's a few different examples of this. One of them is either known as Acey Deucey or In Between the Sheets or In Between, where you have two cards that are laid out, one on the left, one on the right. And then you bet how much you think it's likely that the next card will be between those two cards.
Yeah.
And if what, and you can bet up to the amount that's in the pot currently. And if you lose, you have to match, you have to put that much into the pot. If you win, you pull that much out of the pot. But then to, just to make it cruel, you typically play that with double burn on the ends. Meaning if there is an ace and a deuce showing, if an ace or a deuce comes up, then you have to double whatever you said you were going to bet. I've also seen it played with guts. There's two card or three card variants of guts, where it's like the best two cards will take the pot. And in those games, I've typically played it where you do a 1-2-3 drop. If you don't drop your hand, that means you're staying in. If you're the only one that stays in, then you get to take half the pot away, or sometimes you do the full pot. But if you didn't, if everyone in there, if three people stayed, one person would take the pot, the other two would match it, and then the game would keep going on from there.
Oh,
that's how in college we were playing poker a lot, and it was all penny ante poker. I mean, really penny ante. And one night, you know, someone lost $30. Which is real money in college back in a long time ago. So after that, we switched to playing spades and hearts instead of
great games.
Having poker nights.
Also great games.
We had a game sort of like that, which was called Bowie. I don't know if you ever heard of that game, where you're dealt five cards and it plays like bridge, where you're trying to take tricks. Everyone's dealt five cards, and then you turn over the last card, and that whatever that is now trump. Those are trump cards. And so, and you're dealt five. Your goal is, if you win three of the five tricks, you get to take the pot. If you take zero tricks, you have to match the pot. And you have this thing where, like, you get to see your hand, you get to see the trump, and then you do this thing where, like, I'm either in or I'm out. But if you're out, you don't have a chance to win the pot. And that we also played in college until one night. You get these sort of exponential things where things keep doubling, and suddenly you're playing with pennies, and suddenly it's like there's $200 in the pot, and somebody might have to match it, and that's like what we eat on for the next 3 months or whatever, you know. And so it's games got a little crazy.
And typically with these types of games, it's not table stakes, meaning you're liable for whatever you bet, no matter how much money you have in front of you on the table. You have to reach into your wallet or write a check or whatever.
And for some of our younger listeners, a check is like a written IOU that people used to.
I was going to ask about that. I wasn't. You know, I didn't want to say anything. Younger one in the crowd. So, I mean, I don't want to.
Yeah, for all you university students, college students out there, that are like, a check. We even spell it with a U up here. That'd be even more confusing.
And a Q.
I know. We're like all over it up here. It's all coming apart. Sorry, Rob, I cut you off there.
No, I was just going to say guts and in between, I've lost more money playing those two games than any other games in the history of poker. And I've lost some money playing Nolan Hold'em, obviously, but nuts and in between. You know, you got the ace and the king out there, and you know, it's I'm going to hit that because the ace can be high or low. I'm going to hit that. Yeah, sure. And an ace comes up.
Right.
Or guts. You know, you got a pair of aces, and it's just crazy. Craziness, I say.
My brother tried to teach me guts one summer at my dad's place, and I totally did not get it. And now I think I've misremembered how it's played this whole time, because I remember thinking of it as just this game where you had to like play three hands in a row of poker, and if you folded at any point in any of those hands, you were not eligible for the pot. But I think maybe that was some weird adjunct version of it. So
it doesn't sound it doesn't sound like guts to me.
Okay, that actually reassures me, because that sure seems like a wacky game.
Another variation that came up the other night that people picked quite a few times was double board hold'em or double board Omaha.
Ah.
Where it's a split pot game, and you can win both, but you know you're trying to sort of Omaha. I find more interesting than hold'em. Hold'em is it seems like it's just always gonna almost always split the pot. I mean, maybe not sometimes, but it feels like it mostly is. But Omaha, I think, gets interesting because you can use different cards on different boards too.
And so, I guess please, John. Yeah, please.
I was just gonna ask, did they do, you know, full five card boards?
Yep. So deal out two flops at the same time, yep. Two turns, two rivers, and then you know you can try to win one or both.
And do you have to declare for those, or is it just show and the
show
cards play?
And yeah,
that's the best.
There was one where we did like a high low or both. That was just Omaha, straight up Omaha, but it was high low. But you actually, you know, it wasn't like typical high low. You had to actually take chips in your hand and put 1, 0 or 2. And 0 meant I'm going low, 1 meant I'm going high, and 2 meant I'm going for both. And then you know you compared between them or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everyone declares on 3, and then
high low declare. Yeah, you
High low declare.
Typically the way I've played it in the past is you take your chips beneath the table, in your left hand you keep the leftovers, and you bring your right hand up above, and then everyone at the same time reveals what's in their hand to do the declare. The hard part is if you declare you're going both ways, you have to win both ways. Otherwise, you win nothing.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So some of those, and I think in most games in casinos now, they've done away with the declaring element of it because you can angle shoot that with a partner and like, you know, signal to them to go low. And there's ways for the game to be impacted. But in the home games, I like that kind of element of it as well. And, this is a bit of a trip down memory lane. What about bomb pots? That's another kind of odd element. So you might see this in casinos on like dealer changes or in private home games or something like that. And it's basically, it's either hold'em or Omaha for the most part. And it's just instead of a normal pre-flop action, everybody puts in 4 big blinds or 8 big blinds or whatever the number is at that place. And then you go right to the flop. So you deal out it. Usually these are double boards, although not always. You just deal out 2 flops. And there's a round of betting, 2 turns, a round of betting, 2 rivers, a round of betting. And it makes it really interesting because there's no range analysis to go from pre-flop to the flop. People show up there with literally 100% of their range and all these weird combos of hands. And again, if you can scoop both boards, you know, you're going to win a pretty substantial pot because everybody at the table's put in, you know, 4 big blinds. If there's 9 people there, that's already 36 bigs before any actual betting goes in. So you can win some pretty big. What kind of adjustments? Let's talk about that just for a second, because this is a game that folks might actually encounter. Mm-hmm. What kind of adjustments do you guys make in bomb pots? Like I've heard if you can't go for both, don't keep betting. I'm not sure that's really true, but if people have said it, are there general rules for playing bomb bot strategically?
Don't ask me, because if Rob's lost most of his funds on in between and guts, I am a bomb pot just I'm a terrible.
Yeah, I'm in Chris's corner. I've played a few on WPT because they have WPT bomb pots, and then there's three blinds. So it kind of gets crazy. Even at the low stakes, get kind of big. You know, when there's a bomb pot every once in a while, and it's all of a sudden you're like playing for big. You know, you got 1,000 big blinds in front of you. So
So one of the things I've always heard, right, is that when you have a especially in hold'em bomb pots, when you have a draw to the nuts, that you should just go nuts. Basically, you just go crazy. So like, if you've got the ace high, if you got, you know, ace five of spades, and there's two spades in the board, like that's just sort of like your permission to put a lot of chips in the middle. And I have tried that, and I'm not sure the person giving me that advice didn't want me to put a lot of chips in the middle with,
are you sure,
with a drawing
hand. Are you sure they're your friend, Chris?
Yeah.
And then I'm thinking about how much do I value top pair when I'm in those situations?
Yeah.
That's where I'm at. When I'm on the other end where I'm like, if I have top pair and Chris is betting into me with his draws all the time, how sticky do I get with my pairs? And then do I just fold when draws come in? And but then there's so much in the pot.
Well, it's definitely one of those things where because you're playing bigger pots, there's going to be more variance. And because you're not playing an entire evening of bomb pots, you know, it's really tough to say whether it is correct or not. I mean, it's just like playing a tournament. You know, most of the time you're going to end up taking home nothing. Mm-hmm. But those few times you take home a lot will make up for it. That's the theory here as well. Whether or not that theory holds up, I've done no study analysis of those type. Yeah, analysis.
Yeah, I've heard players say that they don't really like bomb pots because if they lose those pots through their session, those are big losses that they can, you know, when they could just play through a normal session, not have any bomb pots, and just have a normal session without having those big swings. You know,
well, I mean, it's kind of like saying, okay, every 10th hand or once around, you're going to play one hand at 10 times the stakes.
Right. I mean, right.
Those hands are going to be make much a bigger impact to your overall win rate than the other hands will.
Yeah. They're going to have a disproportionate impact on, and they're also, like I think you were saying earlier, John, it just really increases the variance in those in that particular way, because you're concentrating a lot of the money won and lost in fewer hands. Rob, do you have a bomb pot strategy?
Not necessarily, other than on micro stakes cash games on ACR, they have the opportunity you could play with a bomb pot.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that the people that gravitate towards those games are more gambly.
Mm-hmm.
So even though you are putting five big blinds in pre-flop, not knowing what, you know, if you have any chance at all, overall, playing those games, you can make a lot of money.
Because all the hands that are not bomb pots, you're playing against a gambly group who isn't afraid to mix it up.
Correct.
Yeah, that makes sense. Speaking of the bomb, I see we've been joined by Graphics16 here in the chat. That's our own Roger Schutte, one of the amazing volunteers here at Rec Poker. Roger helps us produce the podcast in post-production, optimizing the sound and adding layers and features that we wouldn't have otherwise. So Roger, thanks for tuning in, and thank you so much for all your help over the years. It's folks like you that make what we do here possible. And if you see Roger Schutte, Graphics16, buy that guy a beer, because he's a good dude. So let's talk about there's a call out in the YouTube chat here to talk about other kinds of games or wacky home game rules or things like that. One thing that I thought might be interesting is, I know this is a poker podcast, but what are some other card games that, like, you know, John mentioned a couple here that if you like poker, you might enjoy these. Like before I started spending a lot of time playing poker, I played a lot of backgammon. That's not really a corollary, but euchre, spades, hearts, these are great games, great strategy card games that you can play with your friends. You know, Euchre is the team game. Spades and Hearts are one, you know, you're on your own playing with 2 to 3 other players, depending on how you do it. A lot of them are trick based or trump based or both. If your bridge is kind of the game.
I was just going to say bridge is a Euchre is just drunk bridge, basically. So it's, but
there's also 500.
Yeah, 500 is a good game too. I grew up learning bridge. Is before I ever played any poker.
Did you?
My dad,
you're an old soul.
My dad was a big. Actually, my dad and my uncle, you know, he comes from England, were county champions in bridge way back in the day in England. So they're very good bridge players, and I kind of learned from them.
Yeah, Chris, your grandma was a game fan. She enjoyed cards.
I kind of had it on both sides of the family with the games.
Rob, when you were a kid, they were probably still playing Whist. Is that true? That's from when I
I think somebody might have been, but it wasn't me. Now here's a weird one. Somewhere I inherited a Mahjong set.
Ooh, okay.
Now I think my grandmother used to play Mahjong or something, and it was stashed away somewhere, and I found it and I thought, what the hell is this? And this is before they had things like computers, so you couldn't just go online and find out how to play. So I had this Mahjong set, and I actually sent in to some company to get the rules for Mahjong.
Wow.
I couldn't find them anywhere, and so we got the rules for Mahjong, and a bunch of friends of mine, I think I was probably 12 or 13. A bunch of friends of mine got down and we started. Now it turns out this was a game that they played back in the early 1900s. A lot of, you know, coffee clutches, you know, the women would sit around and play Mahjong. So it was, that's something that just, you know, out of the blue, I came up with it and I played it. So I do know how to play Mahjong.
There you go. Cribbage is another great strategy game. That's a little more math based, but it's also got two elements, the pegging element and then the counting of your points. And that can get pretty heated. A good friend and I were taking the train from Halifax to Toronto one time, it's an overnight. And, we were playing cribbage. I think we played to some ridiculous high number. I'm happy to report that I did beat him at the end, but it was so close. I had to peg in the last points, and he was like just waiting to count that hand. Johnny O, if you're listening, I haven't forgotten. That was a really fun train trick. Or Gin Rummy, another fantastic card game that folks might enjoy. If you guys couldn't
play Canasta, anybody play Canasta?
I've never played Canasta. I've never played
it. We had a group of us. We used to play Canasta all the time.
Yeah.
That's a fun game. You use two full decks with jokers.
Oh.
And so it's a lot like Gin Rummy, except the counting of the points and everything is totally different, and how you meld is different. And it was, it's a good game. I love Canasta.
My cousin Dustin and I, up at the cottage one weekend, we played Gin Rummy to 50,000 points over the weekend. That was all we did. We just kept like going neck and neck back and forth. That was really a fun time. I mean, there's just so much. I love games, you know, like poker's become king for me, but there's just so many great ways to pass the time with 2 to 4 players out there, even in this technologically screen centered world. I just love the experience of playing with cards around the table and listening to music with friends, and there's something special about that. If you guys couldn't play poker, is there one game that you feel like would not fill the void? Because poker is too amazing a game to really be replaced. But like, is there one or 1 to 3 games that you could sort of make your peace with playing? John, you're unmuted right now. Are you ready to answer?
Sure. Why not? you know, for me, I really like just about playing any game. So I will play any card game. I guess, you know, cribbage would probably, if you're playing, my wife and I play cards a lot, and cribbage is a good two-person game.
Yes. Whereas, there's not too many. There's not too many good two-person games, so that's like on a short list.
Right, right, exactly. I also really like hearts. I really like spades, but you have to have more people for that.
Yeah.
To make those good games.
I will put this call out. If you're listening at home, email me jim@rec.poker and tell me what are your favorite two-player games. Mrs. Bluffsterini and I are always looking for new games to play together, and there's only so many good two-player games out there. So tweet me @recpokerjim. Email me jim@rec.poker, type it in the YouTube chat, send up a smoke signal. I want to know what are the good two-player games out there that I haven't tried yet. Sorry, Rob, you're saying.
I was just going to say backgammon,
yeah,
gin rummy, and cribbage are probably the three best two-player games I'm aware of.
Yeah. There's also Wizard. Wizard is a grain that's
well,
a
there's
lot
also
like
chess.
Euchre.
I mean, if you...
Oh,
you
yeah, know, chess, if, yep.
You know, I played a lot of chess when I was a kid. I don't play it anymore. I don't have anybody to play it with, but I suppose I could play it online if I wanted to, but it's totally different today than it was then. You know, before the advent of the computers and, mm-hmm. and all of the solvers and everything that's going on today, back in the day when I was a teenager, they didn't have any of that crap. And so you were pretty much, you know, you went to the library to get a you went to the library to get a book to find out anything, or right. you looked at an encyclopedia, which people don't even know what those are anymore. So anyway, that's a totally different world.
Yeah. We got a comment from the YouTube chat. Our own Gibber recommends Farkle, which is a dice game. I have played Farkle. That's a great one. I played that with some friends at a party. I don't know, last year or sometime. It's a wagering game with dice, so poker fans might enjoy that aspect of it as well.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. We played as a family group here a couple times, and yeah, we really like Farkle. It's kind of like a wagering game, and what's the other one? That's Yahtzee, almost like Yahtzee,
yeah.
In a way, like very similar kind of feel. Yahtzee is another one. Cribbage for me is probably top because I've played with my mom for so many years, and she continuously beats me, so it's like always a goal to go to. I play poker with mom because I can beat her at that. I can't
nice.
Beat her. I play crib and then I just lose to her. But chess would probably be another one just because the strategy elements there are pretty close to poker, I think. Not entirely because you have 100%, you know, you have complete information of the board.
Right.
But I think, you know, I can get behind the strategy of chess and stuff like that. So I think that's, you know, another good one as well. So
yeah, I used to play more chess. Maybe, Rob, next time we're in the same tri-state area, let's try and get a chess board out and see if we can have some fun. I'm so rusty, I'd be terrible, but it is a fun game.
Me too.
Yeah.
And I used to play. There was there was a guy that I used to work with back in a long time ago, and probably back in the early 70s. And him and I would play at lunch every day.
Hmm.
And he was a math. He was a math professor or something in real life, but he didn't have a job at the time, so he was working at the same company I was. So he's really, really smart and really, really a good chess player. And he beat me every single time. But we'd be in the middle of a game. And I just remember this. This is a great memory of mine because we were in the middle of a game. And then we would write out the positions of all of the pieces. You know, this is a Friday lunch and we didn't quite finish the game. So I had this document in my hand and I spent the whole freaking weekend just studying and saying, how can I win that? What was my next play? And I found it. There was absolutely a way that he could not stop me from winning.
Nice.
So, I mean, but that's what it took. It took me a whole freaking weekend to see that solution, whereas he probably would have saw it in 5 minutes while we were playing.
What about you, Chris? How would you fill the void?
I think, I mean, I some combination of bridge and hearts, because I really like those trick based games. I think there's a lot of good strategy there. I mean, this isn't really a card game. I'm a fan of Scrabble. Does that count? Mm-hmm. I like Scrabble. And then, you know, the thing I kept thinking about as everyone was talking is the thing I would really miss about poker is that sort of game of imperfect information.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say I've only played this once, but I think is one that I could really get into to fill the void is that game Werewolf, which is kind of like it's like a party game where somebody is the werewolf and only they know it. And then everyone's trying to figure out who the werewolf is. And everyone else is a townsperson. And every round the lights go out and one of the townspeople is killed. And then the remaining townspeople have to figure out who the werewolf is.
That's fine.
And there is this sort of like element of discovery and trying to figure out, you know, put some logic together that sort of fits some of the poker elements
is,
for me.
Is that like the Among Us craze from a few years ago?
Yeah, it's very similar to that, except it's played, you know, there's rules to it and whatever, whereas the Among Us is that video game, but Among Us has had that moment.
Nice.
I think Werewolf got a really big enthusiastic crowd when we got into the COVID thing because you could do it on Zoom.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it was something that you could do as a Zoom group and play Werewolf together.
Yep. Hmm. Yep.
And the game, I think I mentioned it, but Wizard is a card game that comes in a box. It's just a deck of cards with some extra cards in there that have special powers. And it's the same thing. It's about counting tricks, and it's Trump based, but there's some other weird elements of that. If you like some of these games, you'd probably like Wizard as well. For me, I think backgammon, spades, and hearts. I mean, I could probably just play those three games. I would miss euchre, but euchre, you need a partner, and you and like the more you've played with that partner, the better you are. We used to play back when I should have been going to class in high school. I was at this coffee shop across the street called Tea Masters Cafe with my high school buddies. And we spent a lot of time in there playing games. And euchre was a very popular one back there. It is a great game. And of course, like, you know, we'll just round it out, like Monopoly. I certainly enjoyed the hell out of when I was young, making deals with people. And then I got into like Risk and Axis and Allies, which are different sort of board strategy games, but those rules are both really interesting. Settlers of Catan is one in the last couple of years.
Clue is kind of fun, especially for the imperfect information and kind of trying to fill in. Like it's almost like Stud in a way where you're trying to remember, okay, what were the cards that person had and what was, you know, what was the weapon in this closet or whatever, right? So that's a fun one.
Yeah. So anyway, games, folks. I know we're all on screens these days, but don't give up on card games and board games and tile games. There's so much fun to be had out there. And I would hate to not be able to play poker again. But if it was the case, I know that I've got a few standbys that I could still enjoy. Well, I think maybe we should wrap it up here with some food bank raffle and some home game results. So, folks, why don't you start typing the words food bank into the YouTube chat here. If you enter the words food bank, you will be entered into a raffle, which we'll do live here on the show. Chris Jones will operate his Daiso cam, and we'll find out who the lucky winner is going to be. We do this every week because we all kind of support this notion that a lot of people need help just putting food on the table. It might not be someone that you know. It might not be someone that you expect, but someone in your community, someone in your neighborhood, someone in your town or city might just have a little trouble getting food on the plate or in the stomach of their children or other loved ones. And if you just Google food banks near me right now, you'll find some quality organizations that could benefit from a donation of a few dollars, some time, or some non-perishable food items from your pantry. So just want to remind folks that not everyone has it as lucky as we do. And a great way to help those in need is to donate to your local food bank. So I hope that you do. My mom, Martha Reed, has chimed into the YouTube chat to say that, yes, you lived at Tea Masters, not at school and not at home. That is an accurate statement. I was there so often that they eventually paid me to come behind the counter at lunchtime and make sandwiches for all the students that were coming in there because they were a little overtaxed for the lunch hour. And so I would I'd get there when school started, play cards for money for the morning, go make lunch, and then play cards for money in the afternoon. Go to a couple classes. It was a good time. We had a lot of fun at the Tea Masters Cafe. Shout out to Flamingo, the fantastic owner there who made my life so much fun in those years at Northern. Okay. John Somsky, we have some home game results to share with the world. Why don't you reveal some winners to our audience?
Well, we had our No Limit Championship Series on September 6th. And for those who don't know, this is where you get points for how well you do. And those we keep track of those points for the entire year. And your top 10 scores count towards your scores at the end of the year. This week, Carl's 0-6-2-1 got his first No Limit Hold'em victory for the year. And Bone Crusher 14, Marcel Dusik.
We'll get there, Marcel.
Marcel Dusik is the leader of the Player of the Year points race.
Wow.
There.
All right. Way to go, man. And we're you know, this is, and that's through September. So there's a few months left, but things are looking pretty good for Marcel. And as John was saying, you only count your top 10 finishes out of the 12 monthly tournaments that you're eligible to play. So all hope is not lost. And even if you're not in the top 24 on the points race, or is it 18? We'll get to that later. Every winner of one of these is also invited to that end of year championship. So even if you've only been joining us recently and you're not in contention for the Player of the Year points race, you can still win your way into the Tournament of Champions, the championship tournament at the end of the year, just by winning the first Wednesday in October, November, or December.
Yeah, so all you need for that is if we have 12 different winners, those 12 people are automatically entered in, no matter, even if that's the only tournament you played, you'll be in for the Tournament of Champions. And then we will take the top point leaders after that. And it may be, there'll be at least 12, maybe more if someone won more than one tournament, until we get to 24 players. And there will be 24 players invited to the Tournament of Champions.
Okay, thanks, John.
And then Les Paul 99, Michael Pinciero, got his second nightly victory for the year.
Such a nice guy.
Ship and Flipwreck, Luke O'Driscoll, got his sixth nightly victory for the year.
We're going to have to like set up a pin factory in Australia. Some of these Australia and New Zealanders are like taking over the standings. Congratulations, Luke. Way to go. Well,
the thing they don't know is they're just wasting these extra wins, because once you have won a pin, once you've won an event in the daily series, that's the pin for the year. You need to spread
talking,
out. You got to win.
Look who's talking, John.
Hey, I know I'm wasting all sorts of things. No problem there. Then we have Izma got his or her third international victory for the year. Then Izma got his or her fourth international victory for the year.
Whoa. Wow. Okay. Big winner.
And then we have Captain Walleye.
All right.
His first LPP victory for the year. So he can contact info@rec.poker for his free month at Learn Pro Poker. And Captain Walleye, your information is private, despite the fact that everybody knows who you are. So you might want to just flip that.
Yeah, that's right. Attention, Captain Walleye, adjust your Rec Poker profile if you want all the friends at home to know how well you're doing here in the home game club. And congratulations,
my man.
After you
put your trays in the upright position and put your seatbelts.
All right. Well, thank you, John. And it looks like we've activated the Daiso cam. Chris, I see Roger, Jim, and Ron, I believe, is K-Poker Wannabe. Ron, thanks for tuning in this week. Yeah. That makes three to my count. Is that how you see it as well?
I've got the six-sider. We'll do one and two, three and four, and five and six.
All right, sounds good. Let's see how we do.
It's a one.
It's a one.
It's a Jim Reed roll.
You were due. Oh, well, good things happen to good people. Roger Schutte, Graphics 16, you are the winner. Now, Roger, you're already a premium member at Rec Poker, so you have unlocked a free month at either Tournament Poker Edge, PokerCoaching.com, or Learn Pro Poker. These are three of our learning partners who have volunteered some prizes of free months at their fantastic training sites. So send that email, sir, info@rec.poker, and get it on the record. And I'll send you a code you can use to try a free month at one of those fantastic organizations. And thanks again, Roger, for all you do. This is a small, small token of our appreciation. Well, what else do we have coming up here, folks? We already mentioned on this Saturday, the 16th of September, it's the Heads Up series at 2:00 Eastern, 1:00 Central, the only time zone that matters. If you're a little behind on your listening, next week we're going to have Derek Tenbush from Tournament Poker Edge on the podcast on Monday night. Next week, we've also got the book study on Wednesday, Taylor's Twitch stream every Wednesday night. On Thursday, there's Joe's Poker PsyOps, followed by The Peel. That's Eric Jin's Play, Explain, and Learn, which he does every Thursday at 10:30 Eastern. Ben himself is out there in the Twitch streets on Fridays and Saturdays, and sometimes even more than that. You can find all these events. If you go to rec.poker/events, you will see a pretty packed event schedule with multiple events every day. Some are free. Some are only available to our premium members, but I'd encourage you folks go. And our 1 month of our premium membership only costs $5 if you use the code RECPOKER at checkout. So I'd encourage you to do that. And like I said, if you're up to get some live travel in, head over to rec.poker/roadtrips and see if there's anything coming up in your region. And if there isn't, send that email, jim@rec.poker. I was emailing with Michael Savage down in Texas about some card rooms in his region. I'm trying to find the right window to set up a trip down there, but I'd love to get down to Texas and play some cards there. So if there's not a Rec Poker road trip heading to where you are, send an email to see if we can make something happen. We're also talking about maybe getting down to Cincinnati because we've got some locals down there that think it would be fun to have a Rec Poker road trip. So let's make it happen. Well, folks, thank you again for everything, for listening, for showing up in the YouTube chat. Thanks to the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino. Thanks to John Somsky, Rob Washam, Ben Enslow, and Chris Jones. And, of course, everyone at home listening along. We couldn't do it without you. So thanks for your support, and we'll see you next week on the Rec Poker Podcast. Have a good night, everybody.